I call this meeting to order at, what is it, 6:04 p.m. This is a special, 4:04, excuse me, 4:04 p.m. This is a special meeting for Tuesday, January 12th. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
I will, Mr. Mayor. Jim Sykes.
Here.
Matthew Beck.
Here.
George McKee.
Here.
Steve Culligan will not be present. Dan Mayfield.
Here.
Barbara Doty.
Here.
Randall Kowalki.
Present.
You do have a quorum, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Are there any changes to the agenda? Anybody got anything they want to add or change? Seeing none, the agenda is approved as presented. Pledges of Allegiance. Manager Moosey, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Audience participation. We've reached audience participation. This is your opportunity to speak to the Assembly about anything you wish. You have 3 minutes to speak. I don't know. I guess we have a list coming forward. Eugene Haberman, please come forward. You have 3 minutes, starting now.
My name is Eugene Carl Haberman. I represent myself. I follow the public process. The public process is done appropriately, and the decision made by the governing body is more likely in the public interest. Note, when I raised concern at a previous meeting concerning the default setting of 2015, I did note that sometime yesterday or today it has been corrected, so it says the year 2016 when you're clicking on assembly documents and also planning commission, so I saw that corrected. Thank you. The concern I have is I noticed that at 4 o'clock before the meeting started, at 4:04, 4:05, this was handed out. The public didn't get a chance to see it. You're having discussion. It would be nice to have the public connected before so we can speak on it. And how do we speak on something that's handed at 4 o'clock before the meeting starts? And that's the way to go. Also, I'm concerned a continuous policy of indifference. It's like, 18 months since I've addressed the concern that the public shouldn't have to choose to go to a city council meeting or a borough assembly meeting, and tonight the city council Palmer and the borough are meeting at 6 o'clock. And it's also noted on the calendar, both regular meetings for later this month, that you're both and the city of Palmer holding meetings, and I'm split between the two. I should note the public attendance at these meetings, like the Planning Commission, on December 21st, there was only two people there, myself and Assembly Member Mayfield. In the last Borough Planning Commission meeting, there was only myself, and that was it. But I also raised concern, and this is real serious, is that you make a decision after a public hearing, and you should be doing that to make a decision, but you should not be making a decision prior to the public hearing. And what I'm saying here is, at a meeting, I believe it was December 21st, Assembly Member Mayfield spoke at a public hearing on an item that was going to go before the Borough Assembly at a later date, dealing with Big Lake. And after he spoke, I went up on to speak on that public hearing, and I expressed concern for Assembly members to speak at a public hearing at the Borough Planning Commission on an item that was going to go to the Assembly to be heard. And that's not the way. This is not the way to operate. You're supposed to be neutral, not take any position, and allow the public to be engaged and have a public hearing. But you're going prior to your public hearing on that item that's going below to the Borough Planning Commission and speaking there. That's wrong. Absolutely wrong. And the question is whether it has any validity now before you right now, and whether it should go back to the Borough Planning Commission.
Thank you
very much.
Anybody else in the audience wish to speak? We have 3 minutes. Any subject? Anybody want to guess whether it's going to snow or anything like that? Thank you. Okay, I guess we're at item of business. We have one tonight. I'll turn this over to Borough Manager, Mr. Moosey, please.
Good evening. Tonight we'd like to talk about two issues, and we have Ms. Lauren Driscoll here to address those and give a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Manager, through the mayor and to the assembly. We were asked to do a work session today to talk to you a little bit about Title 17, Title 43, titles that we have been talking about quite frequently. Kind of orient myself here and grab the clicker. What I'm going to talk to you about this afternoon is how these two ordinances or two sections of code interact with one another and how those are going to affect our future and what we may or may not want to do about that code and how they work together. So I'm sure as assembly members you get a lot of phone calls and a lot of emails, and we hear it as staff and public meetings also get a lot of feedback. So what is it people are talking about? What are the concerns of our citizens? First would be probably transportation. This crosses a lot of areas, but when this comes to planning and how this works in planning, we're looking at everything from where our roads are being placed to how we're accessing those roads and the conditions of those roads, how we'll fund maintenance into the future, and are we making strategic investments? You know, that's something that Assemblymember Culver talked about is, you know, are we placing these the right way? It's the same thing that Assemblymember Culligan talked about when he really started pushing transportation is, you know, we need to, you know, make these investments in the right spot and get the biggest bang for our buck with these roads. So where are those being located? We also talk about the environment. This is fish, it's air, it's water. We've been talking, we saw Assemblymember Sykes this week talking about air quality and what that means to the borough and how do we educate the public. But this also affects us funding-wise. Both water and air quality are tied to federal regulations. So if we don't start addressing those, talking about them, they also affect health. So a lot of things going on there. And then a long list of information related to fish and how that's affecting our environment. So that's just some of the things we're doing, some of the things our citizens are talking about within environment. Housing is pretty overwhelming. We started a little bit over a year ago having this discussion, partnering with the Valley Board of Realtors, doing an assessment, and we're wrapping up an action plan we're going to be getting to you now that we have a new planner. But well-timed, I was just at the Governor's Housing Summit last week, and I'll just toot our own horn. I think we should be really proud of us. It was nice to be in those different groups. I sat in a group for how to entice public sector investment towards housing. I was very pleased to see who from our community we had there representing us. Jess Hall was there, Patty Cohen was there, several people from like different nonprofits like Matsu Health Foundation, United Way, and several others that help with like prisoner reentry and veterans issues. And I think that's what really hits home on housing. We, the borough, may not go and build housing someday or have a big housing department like some cities you may associate with. We still have a part in this, particularly with planning and particularly with land use. And I think when we're talking about serving our citizens, we have veterans in this group. And I think out of many topics, it hits a lot of different groups. You've got veterans, we've got homeless youth, we have homelessness in general, we have affordability issues, we have building of homes and multifamily, which affects our economy. It's a big driver out here. And we also have seniors. So a lot of different groups that are vying for that, and how are we bringing them in? Economic development. In the 10 years that I've seen here at the borough, this has always been kind of a shaky topic, but what I've really learned from folks like Matsu Business Alliance and our Chambers of Commerce is that the borough can be helpful in providing data, and we can be helpful in making it easy and reliable to do business in the valley. And I think those are some things that we can do with land use, looking at our permitting process and also, you know, how we're laying out uses and moving forward. Fire and EMS, these have been pretty hot topics, excuse the pun, these last 12 months in particular, and how we're funding those, but also where are we putting these services, all related to land use. Disasters, we just kind of seem to keep having them. So whether it's floods, it's volcanoes, it's forest fires, they're now kind of becoming part of our bread and butter, and how does land use work within that? And even funding. Without kind of having land use strategies, it is very difficult to figure out the different funding sources you could pull from and how you're going to use that funding. And as I kind of alluded to, really what's tying this all together is land use and planning. But I really want to put land use out there, because it's not just about writing plans or having plans. It's the plans, it's the code, it's the vision, and it's how the land is getting used that really are pulling these things together. And if we want to talk about quality of life and you know, making this the best Matsu borough we can be, land use is a huge part of that. I found it kind of interesting. I've been working with the manager and looking at your investment portfolio of projects, and we've been looking at, you know, how do we prioritize those and how do we pull them into our departments and look at those. Something I did an exercise with some of the other staff, and we started putting a value on how each one of these projects would support different goals and objectives of the borough. They're all good projects, but one of the things I found interesting is looking at Title 43 and 17, they literally kind of hit across the map. So whether it's running the borough more efficiently, building something like Point Mac or a road or a school, or even figuring out how to fund things, these two sections of code really are at the base of what we're doing. And so having them be as efficient as possible and the best tool possible is really important for overall success of the borough. So leave it to the planner to have to make a timeline, but I think it's really important, because one of the things that we've been missing in this discussion with you, the assembly, is kind of what is this big picture? We've talked about Title 43, we've talked about 17, we've talked about roads, but we really haven't kind of put these all together and talked about them as a cohesive picture. How do you go about really accomplishing all of these pieces that lead to where we want to go? Really, we've got a lot of this work started with Title 43. And I think the bonus here is we've got that in the works. You can actually see just last week, Planning Commission passed a resolution moving forward a new set of amendments. So that is moving forward. And what we're going to be doing is creating a clearer, safer, and a more efficient code there. And I think there's been a lot of good work done. While this is going on, I would also suggest that this is a good time to do our community council boundary review. We are past due. Code says we should be doing it every 3 years. I think we're probably woefully behind that schedule. Typically, that process involves us notifying the community councils. We do not force them to change their boundaries. Those that are willing, in fact, we've gotten inquiries recently from Talkeetna and a couple other community councils, so we're probably due for this. I would also suggest, while we're looking at this, is, as we've talked about with you previously, we have the MS4 permit, which is about stormwater, that's coming up. We also have the MPO assessment that showed us that we are probably going to have to become an MPO, so that's coming up. And both of those federal components relate to a census-designated place for urban areas. And if we're going to start laying down boundaries, at least that one component in the core area, we've never really kind of formally pulled the core area out on its own. We kind of just generally referred to it. We have a map, but it's been a while since it's been updated. It might be a good time to look at that boundary and consider changing it and amending it to look more like that urban area so that we're prepping. I think many of you could agree one of the more challenging things about regional coordination is putting lines on a map. And that is definitely something that is part of the MS4 and the MPO process. And I think something we've learned from our neighbors is the sooner the better, rather than waiting till the very end and either having a boundary forced on us or not having enough time to negotiate with our co-governments on what that looks like. So this could also be good coordination right there and good prep time. And that leads us right into Title 17. To put it nicely, it is a very piecemeal piece of code. I think an excellent example of that is just looking at conditional use permits. There's actually a section, conditional use permits. You can see it right in the table of contents. But then there are four other conditional use permits not in that section. That's just not very logical, nor is it very efficient. And so there are some things that we can do by just even reorganizing the code to pull all these pieces together, and then also streamlining that process. Here's the one basic permit you use to start your CUP process. There may be additional components based on your specialty of use, but But in general, here's one process to follow. Very efficient, very clear. I think we have a very talented staff, and I think both Alex and I have been here about 10 years now, and both have a pretty good relationship with a lot of the different developers. And I can tell you, in my experience, the first couple of years I was here, it was baptism by fire. I spent probably once a week, every week for 2 years with the Mattsu Home Builders, learning and writing code with them for the land use permit and multifamily. So both Alex and I are pretty passionate about keeping to really good timelines and solid process. So I think this is part of the code we're pretty excited about, and I think we can really make a difference. This is a great example of economic development without going out and building something or having to do some big initiative to entice economic development. This is really about process. And this is really about making things clearer and easier so that, you know, we get the future Mattsu that we want, but we also have builders who are in here, developers and investors, doing what they need to do and helping us to implement that. And it definitely is a partnership. So these three steps I've introduced, they're nothing new. These are things we've been talking about for a while. So then I add my awesome star graphic. But really, if we can get to this point, which I estimate was probably about 2 years, we've got Title 43 stuff going on. When I say 2 years, I say from the moment we start to the moment we draft, do public review, have meetings, and it's in front of you and we're adopting. So it's a real beginning to end. I'd say about 2 years, because we can have some of these going hand in hand. If we can get to this point, we have a really solid code. This is a really solid environment for land use development. It's a real solid way to plan and grow from there. But then my question would be to the assembly is, are there other things we need to be doing? Are there other tools out there? I would also suggest that probably when looking at Title 17, it might be advantageous just to research, just to discuss, do we need some type of geographical designation? And I'm not talking about zoning, though I would add the caveat, if you're thinking about R1 and commercial zones and all those things, zoning has changed a lot since then, and there are many tools that fall under that umbrella. But one of our biggest challenges, and it won't go away with streamlining Title 17, is how do I write a code? Let's just take something real easy, signs, because it's been asked for before. How do we write a sign ordinance that is relevant and applicable to the core area, but is also applicable in Squintna, and also works in Willow? That's kind of the trade-off, is we don't really want zoning for all of these long lists of reasons, and I completely understand that, but we're also at a growing point where we also can't individualize and meet our different community needs the most effective way possible. So just because we create geographical zones doesn't mean we need to add more regulations, but it is a way that you can either take existing code, or in the future when you're ready to write new code, you kind of have a hook to hang your hat on. So signs, for instance, you know, you've got size or density. Well, that makes sense in the core area, but maybe you don't need a permit at all in Squintna. Or maybe you have more restrictive, you know, along the highway area for safety. And there's a variety of ways, but right now you have no way to tailor anything. And so I guess my concern is, how are we meeting our citizens' needs best? So I think that's worth talking about. And then the future is open. I mean, we're having a lot of discussions right now based on funding, based on, you know, on encouraging business and on coordinating services. There are tools out there, but they're gonna interact with some kind of zoning, some kind of geographical designation. So the question is, do we want those tools, and how do we customize those tools to work within our future? And I mean, broad guess, you know, whatever we decide to move forward with on those kind of newer components, I mean, that could take 1, 2, 3, however many years you want. I mean, that's only for us to guess. I'll kind of distill this down pretty quickly, but if we're wondering why do this now, I think we've got a few things on our plate. What is the cost of not doing it? You know, again, talking about budgeting, talking about our growing community, talking about these needs, some of the things we're proposing will actually help to save us money in the long run, and will entice businesses and developers who are also going to help us grow the business or grow the borough. you know, being proactive for future growth and development. We've also got, you know, better able to make decisions on kind of a bigger picture. When you have kind of a more comprehensive picture there, it's a lot easier to start to look at the overall borough. For an area the size of West Virginia, as a small state, there aren't very many governing bodies that have to try and meet that many diverse needs for that many people. It's a real challenge. So that would give a big picture opportunity. As I mentioned, coordination with the MPO and MS4 regulations that are coming forward, long-term funding for long-term projects, and then practical regulations that make regional planning easier. These are things that would be very advantageous now. I think here's the big question, because it's the first and the one that we asked ourselves. Why, in kind of the situation we're in a state fiscal crisis, do we go in and talk about land use code and those types of things? I think it is vital to remember, you know, if we're going to treat the borough like a business, we need to be optimistic and recognize that we've got a lot of really great things going on here, and it might not be easy for the state, but we have the ability as a borough, as a local government, to be able to influence our own future. And that can be done in many different ways, but land use planning is a part of that. So uncertainty is the enemy of investment. If we are able to create a stable, permitting, regulatory land use environment for development, that is what they want. They are looking for a fast, simple, clear system. They don't necessarily, they're not actually asking for no regulation. It was interesting at the housing summit last week, I talked to the head for a Pacific Northwest portion of Widener Building, doing all those big apartments in Anchorage, also an investor at UAA and one of their business schools, big player in housing. I said, why aren't you out in the valley? I've got people who want you. I know places we can push you. He goes, how do I know what roads are gonna be there? How do I know jobs and medical services are gonna be around my investment? How do I know they're gonna be able to get fire and life safety issues? How do I know that the people who build next to me or the uses that are next to me are the ones that I want next to me? I don't know how to answer that for him. I could say that your business is going to entice those things, you know, free market is going to bring those, and I do believe that to a point, but when we're asking investors, we're enticing them to put millions of dollars down, they need some level of certainty. I think something that we're also very good at, and given the opportunity, is streamlining simplicity. I heard a lot about Anchorage last week, and I don't mean to throw them under the bus, but it's the same thing there, it's the same thing in Juneau, it's the same thing in Fairbanks. Clear process, efficient process, easy to follow regulations. And if we can stick with that, it makes us a very desirable place to build. And I think the other thing is, and I think it's real, I've seen it happen before, and I think we can all think of situations where it has. Just because we're in a recession or a downtime now does not mean that brighter times aren't ahead. It's actually very cyclical. We'll go through these lulls, and that's, boom, everybody comes out of it and we start to see a surge. This is an ideal time to be having this conversation. It's an ideal time to be doing this kind of work, because it is very hard to make code changes and process changes when we're in the thick of it. So at this time, when we've got a little bit of time to discuss, work with developers and builders, we could be really poised to take advantage of the boom that will come. And just to kind of summarize this, what is it we want to achieve? I think we want to be the best community in the state of Alaska to live in, and I think we want to be where businesses come to be. But we can also, I think, represent all of our borough citizens better through better land use planning. We have a very diverse community now. We have urban areas. Say with me, urban. I couldn't say it until the census numbers came out, but we really do have an urban area that has urban problems. But we also have our own version of suburbia that isn't rural, but it's not urban. And even they are struggling with what are they. It was interesting when we were doing research for Title 43, and we pulled the original code that created our platting powers. It is pretty progressive. It's actually, it was really interesting, but they actually created districts in there. They created an urban, a rural, and a frontier district with design standards, not where we're going. But it is interesting that these discussions have been had before, and I think even just those three basic designations could be something that we could use to better represent people. Developing clear, consistent code that is inviting for investment and simple, efficient, common sense code. One of the things I'll never forget the home builders telling me, if you don't need the information to approve my permit, then don't ask me about it. Okay. So I think that, you know, we can keep that mantra in mind and know what it is we need to know for the safety of our citizens and to grow our valley, but to also know what not to get into. More efficient use of fiscal resources. This really makes me think of Steve Culligan. And this is one of the things, when he came to us about transportation 2 years ago, he said, we're gonna run out of money, the state's gonna have problems, and I need to make sure we spend it better and spend it wiser. Got that message. So land use planning and how we make fiscal investments go hand in hand. Stronger partnerships with private industry. This is something we've been really working on and I think we can take advantage of. The whole housing component that we've been working on, our housing summit and the housing assessment, we partner with Valley Board of Realtors. Through a grant, they were fiscal partners with us. Great example. Historically, land use permit, multifamily permit, we're both written hand in hand with developers. The new Title 43 worked with development groups. So we are moving in that direction. I think it's a strong partnership and a strong component to what we're doing. And then I really can't emphasize enough that this coordination and the preparation for the MPO and the MS4 stuff, it doesn't matter who we've talked to. Everybody said start as soon as you can. Start as soon as you can, because these things are not easy to work out when you have multiple jurisdictions, and that's really what this is about. And the sooner you can get these things squared away, the better. And it really, all of it integrates into our land use planning, from transportation to water to housing and beyond. So with all that, what are these next steps? And forgive me, Mr. Mayor, if this is gonna come as a surprise, but one of the things at the housing forum or housing summit for the governor last week is I got talking with some of our developers and was kind of mentioning, you know, here's all these things we have going on. Also thinking about some of the other processes we've had these last couple of years and maybe where some hiccups happened, I thought, wouldn't it be good to have a blue ribbon task force of really experts? These are developers, builders, investors from around the borough. And we did something like this when we looked at health powers. We did something like this when we looked at police powers, of getting a group of people together, experts in that area, and really using them to vet things, to give constructive feedback, and also to help review things. They don't meet on a monthly basis. They're more based on a needs basis. So, you know, you'd kick that off. You'd talk about what. Let's take Title 17, for instance. What are we working through on that? They either highlight things we're missing or say, don't go there. You know, just give us some of that immediate feedback that's really hard to get in a typical public process. And that's not to say we wouldn't have the rest of the public process with everything we put forward. This is just one extra step to really, I think one of the things we've learned too is the land use code is also very technical, and little things can have big ramifications. So having these experts, I think, would be very helpful. One of the things we learned from Anchorage with their Title 21 project and their zoning rewrite, they said if they could do anything different, they would have invited developers in once the code was finished, before it was adopted, had them bring projects and actually push the project through the code, so you started to find your hiccups. And that's, again, an example of something this Blue Ribbon Task Force could do, is help us to kind of, you know, they've got projects and things we could run through to make sure we're not missing the boat and causing hiccups later. I also think consistency for the project, and we're looking at a 4 to 5 year kind of span here. Having experts who really kind of stay with this through these different pieces could also be very helpful to create some consistency. We're working on Title 43. The community council boundary review, as I suggested, could begin very soon. Title 17, I would propose that we start that following 43 in the community council boundary review. I think it would give us a lot of really good information, both on how we're going to subdivide land and then also what those boundaries look like before we venture into that next process. And another role for that potential task force is once we've got this nice base of code, is to then kind of tease out from that group what other things need to be dealt with. I'm not saying I'm in favor or against any of these things, but other tools that have been thrown out there are, you know, driveway, you know, looking at the driveway permit, is there an impact fee? You know, different kind of components that go into code, different pieces like that. So how do we look at those? How do they work into things? I say ask that panel, what kind of programs would we need? Are there other things that we need? And if so, let's put together a list and bring it back in front of you and say, task force makes these recommendations that these are possible tools that could work in the MATSU, and we would like to put more energy into developing those. And let the assembly prioritize those, take that back to that task force, and we could start developing those tools and moving forward with that. And like I said, you'd have a very robust public involvement process through all of these, but the Blue Ribbon Task Force would be an extra added level. That's it. I hope that helps.
Questions and answers? Assemblymember Kowalki?
Yes, thank you for that overview. It was very helpful, and I apologize if I missed it, but I don't know what an MPO is or a MS4.
Perfect. And, you know, we should definitely set up a meeting. We've got some really great documents we could go over with you when you have a chance. But basically, the MPO is a metropolitan planning organization. And when a community reaches a certain population and density threshold, we then, to get transportation funding from the feds, have to form a regional transportation group that takes in the cities and us, and there are certain required documents and practices, but it's something that has to happen. And that will come probably with 2020 is when the next census is here, and you have to use decennial census numbers. So we're probably pushing the threshold now or even across it, but it doesn't become official till those new numbers are out. MS4 is for stormwater management. And so that's a permitting process, it's an educational component, all these different things, and there's coordination, heavy coordination between the state and the other municipalities as well.
Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much for your presentation, Lauren. My question is we seem to see additional growth coming back across the core area and following the huge amount of growth we had down Connect Goose Bay area. And there seems to have been I can only describe it as a lack of anticipation and working with developers and subdividers in designing access, transportation routes, access for school, emergency services, fire, those kinds of things. And the subdivisions have been platted. They're approved. They're starting to build. So how do you envision this examination of this sort of process while we are really still dealing with some very heavy problems that we're facing right now?
You know, it's really a mix of things. I mean, I think part of the amendments that are being brought forward for 43 right now do have to do with access, but I can tell you from a staff perspective, from state perspective, we've actually just recently started talking a lot about access. In fact, Jessica Smith, our transportation planner, is going to be in front of the TAB talking to them about access management. I believe Mike Campfield from Capital Projects is bringing forward an access management plan for our part of Bogart and Selden. And those plans are great ways to start dealing with that access, and we're trying to kind of get ahead of that one. We also have two access corridor management plans in the earmark projects that we have that we'll probably start about next year. The other thing that's been very fruitful conversation we've been having with DOT is coordinating with their traffic folks. And we're looking at right now our driveway permit, the state's driveway permit process, how do those align, and taking some key roads like KGB and the parks, and looking at if you were to designate access along the way ahead of time and to be able to map those, would we be able to create an expedited permitting process or incentivize that somehow so that we got the access that we wanted to preserve that infrastructure and that investment? Also, that would entice development because they like certainty, so they'd know where those intersections were at. And if we've got those pre-mapped, we can also start to pull those into the platting process. Something we've been talking about too is in the LRTP is making those pre-designated accesses part of the LRTP as well. So, you know, that's a document the platting board can refer to and really say, look, you've got an access right there. The state's saying that's the one, or the borough's saying that's the one. If you just come over a bit, and the incentive here is, look, you know, you either waive the permitting fee or incentivize that some way, and you wouldn't stop access outside those. I mean, we got to allow for some flexibility, but it's like if you want to get access outside these pre-designated areas, then you're probably going to have to put a light in, or you're probably going to have to put, you know, frontage roads or these other components. We are having some really good discussions with DOT right now about access primarily on those arterials and collectors.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I just would like to thank the planning department for putting together the workshop that was originally requested by Assemblymember Culligan. I think I was the only other Assemblymember that attended it, but it was very worthwhile to see all the city's planners, the borough planners, the state planners sitting down and trying to figure out a way to do it better. And I think that this may be coming from some of the positive things that we learned there, and I encourage assembly members to take a look at some of that work, because I do believe it is available, is it not?
Correct, it is available. And these are projects directly related to that workshop. Another thing, I think Dr. Doty also brought to our attention, and I think we're gonna be able to work it into the LRTP, and the state seems receptive to, and I even mentioned it to some of the developers at the Housing Summit, was, you know, look, we've got some critical connection components we need to be making where land hasn't been developed yet. We even talked about, we have some implementation money for the LRTP of doing a grid analysis to make sure we're really noting these roads that are gonna make those significant connections. And what if we said to the developers, when they go into those areas, if you give us the room for an arterial or you give us the room for a collector, you can build a residential standards, but what can we do to kind of help, you know, with that right of way and things like that? Because I mean, one of the big expenses we have, especially as we're growing and have to build bigger roads, is additional right of way and utility moving and things like that. So if we can get ahead of that and say, look, we know we've got to go there eventually, you know, either through some kind of, you know, tax incentive or another, you know, incentive, there could be some real advantages there. And that's really, I mean, they're roads, but they're also an access component.
Okay. Assemblymember Doty, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. I really like your Blue Ribbon Task Force idea, because I think there's a lot of public education that needs to happen, as well as public comment. But there's an opportunity when you have some knowledgeable experts that are not just assembly and just borough staff coming together to try to move forward with something. I also like your carrot and stick approach. I'm aware of other rapidly growing communities outside of the state that have taken the moratorium on no future building until we sort this out approach. Not the best for economic development, but necessary sometimes when it becomes a crisis. So I'm hoping we can avoid that approach by working collaboratively with some incentivizing and collaboration with the people that are doing the building. My question actually is more about the idea about a community council reassessment. And some of you may or may not know that the community council designation areas are not all inclusive, even in the core areas. So for instance, there's an area down Engstrom Road to the right side of Engstrom Road that is actually in Assemblyperson Sykes' district that is not in any community council area, but is getting 300 new homes. Those kinds of areas that have no representation in the form of a community council currently don't have any reason necessarily, you know, how can they get annexed into another community council? What's the right definition? What's our role as assembly people to make sure that at least the critically rapidly developing areas do have some sort of a community council, and the people in that community know that they can develop or enact their community council? Because we also have some inactive community councils that never meet and don't have any meetings. We also don't have any standards for how those community councils operate. They're not part of the governing body of the borough. They're separate entities. And so how can we facilitate that process? And I think it's something that we are obligated as an assembly to really pay attention to with our rapid growth.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Actually, my question was kind of along the same lines. So the community council review, boundary review, I missed the exact purpose of that. And so is it to right-size the community councils? Is it to create some zoning districts or some districts within the community council for development? What was the purpose of that?
It's regularly in our code to do it every 3 years. And I think it's to give those communities an opportunity to say, has something occurred? Like, for instance, you have 300 houses show up a road down the way. It's like a road service area. They may want representation. So within 3 years, that's normally a good time to kind of step back and go, do we need to change our boundaries? Some communities can go through a split where it's like, you know, we don't identify with that anymore, and here's how we identify. So it gives them that opportunity. I mean, basically, we send out a letter saying, here's the process, here's what's entailed. Please discuss this amongst yourselves as a community council and decide if you would like to move forward with amending your boundaries. If not, here they are, and we're going to keep them this way. Are you good with that? Yes, no. From a internal planning and land use component, I think, one, knowing that those districts are current is important as we start to reach out to communities and community councils who represent, you know, if Dr. Doty is saying, you know, have a lot of public involvement, really educate people, having inclusive community councils is very helpful for that. They're excellent at getting the message out, many of them, for their communities. But the other thing is while we're looking at districts, let's talk about this MPO and MS4 permit boundary. How does it fit with our existing communities? Is it going to lay over any of those? Is it going to be awkward? I think one of the things, too, we're starting to see, like, Big Lake, Meadow Lake, and KGB is 15 years ago, well, there's a lot of distance between us and you, and now they're almost like smushed right together, and how does that kind of play, and if things change? So that's really the purpose of the boundary review.
So just a little follow-up, because under the community council review, the slideshow, the presentation indicates including creation of urban zones as designated by the census. So, I represent two community councils that really don't have an urban core to them. Would we do in that?
There's only one.
Okay.
There's only one for the entire borough. I don't have the map with me, but we saw it in the MPO assessment. It's the most relatable thing is it's the core area. It's the areas between Palmer and Wasilla, a little bit out of there, and somewhat down KGB. It's our densely populated urban areas. So there's only one in the whole borough. So we wouldn't have to worry about that applying to any of the other communities.
The urban zone was that stretched zone that we talked about under the MPO discussion. Okay,
yes.
I've got that clear. Thanks.
And then in some future place, you know, we move forward with other zoning. I mean, then that's to talk about. But the zone we're after in this step two is the core area.
Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you. Just in follow-up and looking at the reassessment of the community councils, I think what would benefit us is if each person had within their district the specific information of where there are gaps in no coverage for community councils, how about are there gaps in road service area coverage, what would be the logical best guess of where you could fit those into another existing place, and could we, in fact, pen a letter to those community councils or other entities requesting they consider annexing that area? If we took that approach district by district, we could easily address in each of our districts where the areas of conflict are. We're not forcing anything. Basically, what we're doing, which you're just saying, hey, did you know this is happening next to you? Is this consistent with what you're doing? And this is a legal question I will direct to the attorney. I believe the assembly does have the power to do some assignment should it not be accepted in some ways with some of the boundaries.
It depends on which boundaries you're talking about. Community council boundaries are set ultimately by the assembly. Any type of zoning or land use boundaries, likewise, set by the assembly, except for things like municipal planning organization, because potentially that's a density. It's probably going to go precinct by precinct after
actually,
the census.
It follows the census designated places that right. come out of census. CDPs.
When it comes to road service areas and fire service areas, you don't, because back in, I believe it was 1996, state law was amended that basically took that power away from the assembly and said, if you want to change the boundaries of RSAs or FSAs, you have to put it to the voters, and the people that are in the FSA or RSA have to vote to change the boundaries. And then you need to have a plurality vote. That means the people that are in the boundary have to vote 50% for the change, and then the people that are outside the boundary who are coming in, for example, would have to vote yes as well. Or if you were going to detach some people to go from one RSA to another RSA, you would need all three groups, the old RSA, the new RSA, and the people to be moved to vote yes. It's not insurmountable. It's a little complicated.
I have a question. When is the date of the three-year review of the community council boundaries by code? So what date is that?
It was last done a while ago.
It was what?
It was a while ago before when I was pulling old legislation. I think we're coming up on like 10 years. It's been long overdue. We've had other ones throughout. It also says in code, like, at any one time, a community council can come forward and say, yeah, this big thing happened. We want to review our boundaries. And we can administer just that one at a time. That does happen.
Our borough code requires us to review it every 3 years.
Yeah.
So that'd be one of the first things we should do is follow the code,
yeah.
I would think.
And then or amend code.
Title 17, there's an assembly resolution directing review of that. What was it? May 5th, 2015, 18 months it said to get it back. So that'd be November 5th, 2016. So how are we doing on that? Are we going to meet
on
that?
Title 17 or Title 43?
Title 17.
We're making some pretty decent progress. Some of the work was done up front when we did some zoning rewrites a couple years ago, so we've got a lot of those pieces. And we're putting those together. So I think we can make that
timeline. The assembly's going to see something November 6th by that. So we'll.
I think, realistically, through the manager, I think we could probably have a draft ready to start going through public review and those pieces, but I don't know if you're going to be ready for adoption by November.
No, that's fine. I'm just checking. We are going to see, the assembly is going to see something by this fall.
Yeah.
According to that draft
we can,
or no draft, and then we could proceed there. And then Title 43, the Planning Commission just passed a resolution directing something on inconsistencies.
Yeah, they just passed a resolution moving forward those amendments as well.
And so what's the process there?
I would have to double check with Eileen. I'm not sure if they have more amendments that are hanging out at Planning Board, but I do know that these pieces have been passed, and I believe that next piece is coming to you guys. So I don't know if there's additional work in addition to the.
Excuse me.
Bosses on the phone.
Is this Ms.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Bosco?
This is Eileen. I've been listening to this meeting. Hello.
Hello. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, great. I'm sitting here at Mauna Kea State Park, participating in this meeting and enjoying the discussion and stuff. I just wanted to give you an update that the planning board. Decided upon themselves to work with Paul and Peggy to review the other inconsistencies of that Title 43 that had been brought forward, and they made really good progress on their own. And I just kind of stepped back, and they prepared a really great document that they felt comfortable with. So that inconsistencies section of that memorandum has been addressed by the planning board. It's been through the planning commission and should come forward to you. So that was kind of the process. We had talked about that transportation component, And we kind of backed away from that when the planning board just stepped up and started, you know, having their own work sessions and making their good progress. So that's where we're at with that. The next step, of course, would be to look at the last list of topics, which would be more policy-type calls that would need a little bit deeper discussion that might be good for that work group or Blue Ribbon Task Force that Lauren was talking about. So
I didn't get a date when it was coming to the Assembly.
I'm at the state park at the base of Mauna Kea on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Oh, boy, that's what I thought you said. So what? Any idea when the inconsistencies would come in front of the Assembly?
As soon as I get back in another week or so, we'll get it on the Assembly's agenda. So February, March.
Okay, very good.
Mr. Mayor, I just want to add that boundary review is actually in Title II. It's actually under kind of the loose framework that is the community councils and what they do and what they have the ability to do and what they must do.
Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to follow up on the discussion of aligning different districts. Talkeetna just had one of those votes where everybody who was going to come in voted and everybody who had to accept it also voted, and it was done, and it worked. And so is there a real, I've often felt that we should have the RSAs and FSAs more aligned than they are, you know, where possible, and is it, do you believe that it is advantageous to do that so that you have a community council, an RSA, and an FSA that are all aligned?
I have no opinion on that.
Okay, because I don't think we should be afraid of trying it if there's a benefit.
If I could just make one comment on that.
Go ahead. Ms. Prasco.
Thanks. I think it's a great goal. How realistic it is, I'm not sure, because the factors that affect fire service and road service are quite a bit different.
Excuse me a second. Mr. Haberman?
Where the stations are located.
Please be seated.
The geographic districts and so forth. And, I think it's great to try, but when you talk about the RSAs and the FSAs, that's a taxation issue. They're actually voting to tax themselves, whereas the community councils are self-regulated and kind of a different animal. So that's just my comments on that. It might make it a little bit challenging, but we could certainly look at it.
Assemblymember McKee?
You indicate here that Title 17 suffers from inconsistencies and is unclear because it was adopted and developed piecemeal. And it looks like that's what's happening right now to me. So my question to you is this. When do you anticipate a final Title 17? I would ask if it would be in my lifetime, but that's terribly optimistic. Do you think it would be in yours?
Well, I'm not going to be presumptive and guess your lifetime, but as the mayor indicated, we're hoping for a draft by November of this year.
And adoption. When do you anticipate an adoption of this thing? Look, this is not a frivolous question. You do know that we built Mokoton School. It was approved by the Assembly, and it was approved by the planning, and in fact, it doesn't have the two legal access points that it's supposed to have.
Assemblymember McKee, on something like this, I would presume because we have a resolution giving us direction from the Assembly to come back at a certain time, we would have a draft ready by fall to put in front of the Assembly. From there, we would then discuss with the body if we, you know, what level of public involvement. We would probably make a suggestion. Do we go back to the TAB and Planning Commission and bring that up to you? There are a variety of things we can do. But to rewrite or to streamline a large section of code a year to a year and a half is not unreasonable.
So thank you. That's a tough question too, by the way. So Title 17, we're pretty much on schedule. We'll see a draft sometime before November, and then they'll proceed to work on that. Title 43, Assemblymember McKee, that's where the inconsistencies are, and that's the one the Planning Commission just asked staff within the past week to start putting something together. So they have something that we'll probably see fairly quickly. Yeah. Well, titles.
So Title 43, I think Eileen indicated, has kind of two layers. There's like the health and life safety must-do kind of stuff that is on its way to you. It just made it through the Planning Commission. It's on its way. There's some more policy things that are being negotiated with the Platting Board, and then those pieces will come on their way. So I anticipate you'll probably have your platting code completely done and adopted early summer by the time all these pieces come together. We've already started pulling together Title 17 stuff because we got direction from the Assembly earlier last year. So we're pulling those pieces together, and we anticipate, you know, that's one of the reasons I suggest the Blue Ribbon Task Force, because as we're going through this, it would be nice to have that board to kind of continue bouncing these things off of. But we anticipate having a draft of Title 17 revised by November.
Okay, Assemblymember Doty, did you have a question?
Just a comment. I appreciated the idea of really putting some serious thought towards the subsections within the borough of urban, rural, and frontier, and trying to define, you know, what are we as, you know, we get classified as a borough based on whatever people's privileges or what their needs are sometimes. You know, are we suburban? Are we urban? I would suggest maybe we have something I would call Rurbia, which is sort of a combination of suburbia and urban, rural. But I really do support the idea of defining urban, sort of the urban core area, especially because we have a mandate to need to define that in the very near future. And planning ahead rather than trying to catch up makes a lot of sense. The idea of defining a population that might be rural and a population that might be frontier within our borough landmass, I think makes also good sense. And so when someone calls me and says, hey, you know, the ATV use here in my area is really a problem, and they happen to live in Squitna, I'm going to say, gee, it's probably your neighbor. You know, on the other hand, when it's in my community, I'm going to say, let me see what I can do about that. What are the new regulations that apply to this district area? And I think that's a very practical application so that we can prevent some of the less successful development that we've done in the past. So I appreciate Mr. McKee's comments, but I do appreciate what you're talking about, and I think we are working forward in a fairly fast pace. So thank you.
Any other questions? I want to thank you very much. That was a great, and I know we're putting a little pressure on you, but we just like to see a few things happen here. So
completely understand. Thank you, okay, for your time.
And is Eileen still on the phone, Ms. Basco?
Yes, I am.
Well, enjoy yourself down there.
In wide right.
And thank you for calling in. We appreciate that.
Bring macadamia nuts.
Thank you very much, and
thank
aloha.
You. Is there anything else, Mr. Moosey, on this issue, or should we move on?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. So we'll go to Assembly and staff comments. Mr. Spropolis, any comments? Seeing none. Madam Clerk, Mr. Moosey?
Yes, sir.
Any Assembly comments? Do you want to, Assemblymember Beck?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to thank the Planning Department for all of your work and the presentation. I thought it was well done, and I appreciate you looking out ahead and where we're going, and it does give me a lot of optimism knowing that you guys are kind of behind the wheel of this. Thank you very much.
Assemblymember Doty?
Thank you. I just would like to make sure that we follow up on the concept of the community council review and have a forward-thinking plan on how to approach that. I'm open to ideas about how best to approach that.
Assemblymember Sykes?
I'd also like to thank the Planning Department for bringing this forward. And in relation to what Assemblymember Doty just said, I have notified, I've got like 9 active community councils in my district. I did notify the Gateway Community Council that there is a vacant space adjoining their area that shares some of the common problems right around the Colony Schools area that are shared by Assemblymember Doty's district and the vacant space between our two districts. So the community councils are becoming aware, but I think we should really make it official and reach out better.
Anybody else? Comments? Assemblymember Mayfield? Go ahead and we'll.
Thanks, Ms. Mayor. Just one comment in regards to the public comments that were made tonight. You know, I'm kind of surprised that Mr. Haberman would attempt to stifle my free speech by thinking that there's something incredulous about my giving testimony in front of a planning commission. Last I checked, I think I can give any public testimony or represent my community at any public meeting, so long as I'm not violating the Open Meetings Act. So I'm not quite sure what the purpose of the comment was, but I'll certainly defer to the attorney as far as any legal coaching that he may give me as far as the extent of my free speech. Thank you.
Member Kwalke?
Yes, just real briefly. Again, thank you, Lauren and team, for the presentation. I am attending, I believe it's next week. I need to check my calendar with the folks in Talkeetna who are actively pursuing a boundary review. Lauren's been help to me at this point on that, and I expect to be working through this. So since no one else has mentioned their community doing this, we may be the poster child for the first attempt at this. So thank you.
Senator McKee, you got anything, any comments, sir? Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for a great presentation. And I think it would be a good idea to get us the code section and when, the timing on the review of the boundaries and the process, how you want to do this, and get something to the assembly in a memo form or something. And sometimes that overlap of RSAs, FSAs, community councils, and the whole way we fund roads and fire is a big issue over the next decade or two. And probably the easiest way to get unelected would be to mess around there. Any objection? We're going to adjourn this meeting at 5:05 p.m. on January 12, 2016.